This episode is brought to you by Sand Concepts. Smell your way to happiness with Sand Concepts. Sand Concepts is a fragrance house specializing in daily aromatherapy essentials to enhance and elevate your overall wellness. Their products include essential oil blends, diffusers, hand-poured candles, and sanitizers that are kept at pocket-friendly price. Their beautiful fragrance, Eclipse, Starlight, Twilight, and Moonlight, are sourced from France, and they are handcrafted by their in-house chemist that's bound to keep you feeling and smelling incredible all day. So what are you waiting for? Do go to www.scentconcepts.co to find out more. If you're a new entrepreneur, an important task is ensuring that your business is compliant with all local, state, and federal regulations. Some legal matters require immediate consideration, and you will want to address those issues as soon as possible. To help you with that, we've invited an impressive attorney to share the essential tasks to handle right away when starting a business. Her name is none other than Rachel King. Rachel is a serial entrepreneur starting at the age of 12. This work ethic and drive at an early age led to 7 years of military service. Utilizing her disciplined skills, she moved forward with owning multiple businesses and acquired the desire to continue expanding her talents. The passion for law was instilled in her from birth from her father's law career, so she followed, opening her law firm in 2014. And the combination of entrepreneurship, discipline, training, and the understanding of laws allows her to be the rising leader for California, Arizona, Texas, and Kentucky with a firm specializing in business law, family law, estate law, and real estate law, and growing. She has also been nominated for Lawyer of the Year 2022 by Best Lawyers, 2019 America Business Awards, Ghost TV winner, Legal Small Business of the Year, 2019 American Business Awards, and Ghost TV winner, Legal Entrepreneur of the Year. Wow, simply fabulous. All right, so without further ado, let's welcome Rachel into the house. Woohoo! Yay! Hey,
thank you. Rachel. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, wow. It's also my honor and pleasure to have you here. And I'm really grateful and for this lady who has been on my podcast before, Amy Scruggs, shout out to you. Really thankful for this, this connection between us and for recommending Rachel to this show. And, I've never thought that I would be needing a lawyer when I start a business until I read through your profile and I read through your website and the services that you provide for entrepreneurs. Then it intrigued me that I was thinking, hey, you will be definitely somebody that's important for entrepreneurs and for this show as well, because I've never thought that this is so important until I've read so much about what kind of services that you provide for entrepreneurs. Wow. And thank you for serving so many businesses and entrepreneurs for so long, and you have done such an amazing job, you know. and how have you been?
Good. It's been a fun ride. It's always nice to have opportunities to come on shows and kind of share my side and hopefully impart a little bit of wisdom, right, or knowledge. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
You're most welcome. So you're now currently based in Arizona, am I right to say that?
Actually, my physical office is in Southern California, but I work with clients in California, Arizona, Kentucky, and Texas. And my office, partially due to COVID, is completely able to provide remote representation. I have clients all over the United States and even some that live out of country that have legal issues in the states that I practice. So I have a long reach, and I'm super happy to be, and it's just really exciting to represent clients all over the world and the country.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. Wow, interesting. I mean, this is my first time having an attorney on the podcast, so I'll have to be very prim and proper.
No, not at all. Hopefully I make law not so stressful, and we can just have a good time.
Okay, cool. Yep, we're gonna have a good time. And wow, this is truly amazing, you know, to have you here. So I'm pretty sure a lot of us in Singapore and other parts of the world would not know who Rachel King is. So can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. My name is Rachel King. I'm an attorney. I practice law in a very strategic and comprehensive way for my clients. I really opened my law firm with the idea that I would be able to be a resource and problem solve for my clients. Law is very stressful. Attorneys have sometimes poor reputations, or it can be really scary to think that you're going to talk to an attorney or need an attorney. And so it's really my goal when I work with clients to take the stress away from it, make law as approachable as possible, because the reality is, whether you are a business owner or a regular person, I suppose, you're very likely to encounter some kind of legal issue through your life, whether it's directly you or somebody else. So if you have some tools or you know a little bit of concepts, it can really make the process more approachable and not quite as fear-driven. So that's what my foundation of my law firm. I am a litigator, so I go into trial a lot. I'm in court almost every day, and I love being an attorney. On the side, though, I also am a mom and a wife, and I live on a farm, and I do lots of other things outside of the practice of law, but my profession is owning a law firm, running a law firm, and being a litigator.
Okay. Interesting. So just want to ask you, is are these two similar, or are these two really, really different? Because there's attorney and prosecutor. So are they like doing the same, just out of curiosity?
Yeah. So and I'm going to only speak to the areas or the jurisdictions that I know. I don't know out of the country. I certainly can't speak for other countries.
Okay.
In California, though, a prosecutor is an attorney that only works basically for the people. So for the people is an interesting concept, but it's with the government to enforce the criminal laws. So if, for example, there's a murder that's committed, it would be the prosecutors that would press charges for the crime of murder. That's different than, so again, still attorneys, but if you're not a prosecutor, then you kind of fall into the rest of the attorney world, and that's where you handle civil litigation and or criminal defense or something like that. So for me and where we live, a prosecutor's role is to be an attorney that puts the criminal case forward for the jury to decide whether somebody was guilty or not guilty.
I see. Okay. Now I get it. Now I get it. Thanks for this. I didn't know that much until I realized that, so until you tell me that. Okay. So interesting. Wow. So, you know, Rachel, before we dive into the main focus of our interview, our listeners would love to get to know you a bit better. So can you tell us a bit about your backstory and how did you become an attorney and entrepreneur?
Well, my entrepreneur days started far before my attorney days. I opened my first business when I was 12, actually. I was a babysitter, and I had a lot of babysitting jobs. I became very well known in our community as a babysitter. So I started getting more jobs than I could do. And I kind of outsourced them to my friends, and I took a cut. So from a very early age, I had some semblance of business. And then after that, I moved into opening a swim instruction company when I was 16 and doing private swimming lessons. And I've kind of grown as an entrepreneur organically. The practice of law is a company, right? So not the practice of law. My law firm is a company that I started in 2014. And I run it like a business. I also happen to work it and be the one of, you know, the attorney there. But I treat my law firm like any other business owner would. I make a very strong effort to not get sucked into only practicing law. But how I got to be an attorney, how we got here today, I was raised in a family of attorneys. My dad is an attorney. My cousin is an attorney. And I always liked the idea of being an attorney. I liked the kind of power that it evoked from other people. I liked that, you know, I'm sure you've heard, like, you should be a doctor or a lawyer, right? And I was no good at math. So I knew I couldn't become a doctor, but I could write really well. And I'm very good with language and with words. So I went the lawyer route. I went a very non-traditional way. I didn't want to go to college when I was 18. So instead, I joined the Army and did 7 years in the military, through which I was able to get my bachelor's degree, which is required. I got married. I had kids. I went to law school. And by the time I was done with all of that, before I even was a practicing attorney, I already had three kids and had been married for quite a while. So here we are today. It's all worked out, but I don't know that it's a path that most people would take or that I would even recommend. It was a lot of work.
Oh, yeah, especially a lot of things to study, the theses that you got to write, the thousands of words that you got to write, and you got to memorize a lot of laws as well. Wow, it's really, really challenging. Wow, I can imagine if I were to be there, I would be definitely really stressed on it. I might need a counselor to help me out from there.
Yeah, I remember when I shouldn't admit this on anything live, but I'm going to. When I was studying for the bar, so the bar is the big exam you have to take to be a lawyer. Right. And I was studying for it, and my youngest child at the time was a baby, and she had her first birthday. And so her birthday is June 9th. So June 9th comes around, and I'm well into bar prep, and I was studying, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. And about 2 p.m., my mom calls and says, and I talked to my family. I'd done a lot of things that day. But at 2 p.m., my mom calls and she's really upset. And she says, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." And I said, "Sorry for what, Mom? What did you do?" And she said, "I forgot about Abby's first birthday. It's today. And I didn't tell you when we talked earlier." And I felt horrible. She's my child, and I'd forgotten about her first birthday because I was so into studying for the bar and everything you have to learn and all of the stress. And so when you say it's a lot of work, it is so much work that I forgot my daughter's first birthday. It was fun. But you know what? I passed the bar my first time. Mm-hmm. And now she's had plenty of birthdays since then, so she will never remember that day.
Oh, so literally you didn't manage to celebrate with her?
I think we ended up getting a cupcake and like lighting a candle because she was, you know, one. Yeah. But she won't remember. Okay. But no, other than that, thank goodness it was only her first birthday, and kids don't remember their first birthdays.
Yeah, definitely. I can't even remember how I look when I was 1 year old and how I celebrated my birthday on that day.
But right. So if your parents forgot your first birthday, you wouldn't know. I can tell you as a mom, I felt so bad. And that was really the first time I realized exactly how much stress it is to become an attorney and to be an attorney. And that you really have to manage it. And the same would be true of, you know, being an entrepreneur or owning a business, sometimes you get into so much stress. It's so stressful, and it can be great and it can be fun, but it can also be so much work that really figuring out that work-life balance is probably one of the most important things as an entrepreneur, I think.
Yeah, totally. Work-life balance, even though there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there, a lot of them who are called gurus in our lives, they say that, oh, there's no such thing as balance, right? But still, we still need to find time to actually relax, enjoy, watch Netflix a bit, spend time with family, rather than just full focus on the business and not looking forward to meeting your wife or your spouse and all. That's something that if those who are tuning in, you are having such a struggle, then you better work on it rather than, you know, just, oh, I ignore my friends, ignore my family, just full focus on my empire that I'm building. that would be really, really not right.
And you're going to get burnout. And even though there are the gurus that say, you know, you have to work hard, you do. I work very hard. You work very hard. We all work very hard. But even taking 10 minutes just for yourself a day, or figuring out how to do what you need to do to maintain the semblance of work-life balance, that doesn't mean you play an equal amount that you work. It just means you figure out how to make it so that you don't lose yourself in whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah, totally, totally. I agree with you. We can be obsessed, but not to the extent where we forget about our family, our friends, our hobbies, and all this other stuff. And Rachel, I just want to ask you, how did you overcome those stress then? Like, not just back in the days, but also right now. Like, how do you manage your stress, especially when you got to meet with clients, you have to attend trials, and you have family that you got to spend time with? How do you actually balance them out?
I run. I run, and I do a lot of yoga. My time is very valuable to me, and I need to be at my best kind of mental space every time I go into trial or I talk to a client. So I make sure I carve out time every single day to either go for a run or do yoga. And it really helps clear my mind. It's a time just for me. It helps me physically so that I can get out some of the negative stress. It is an opportunity where I do a lot of my thinking when I'm running, and I think the sweat probably makes me just a little bit more chill. Sometimes I have to work up a sweat to feel a little better. So I do that every day. Mm-hmm. I also, though, am very fortunate to have a really amazing support team. My office staff is really, they're phenomenal, and I rely on them very heavily. So I have learned how to delegate and to use the people that I have with me on my team so that they can be the best that they can be. That means that if I can delegate something to them and they can do a great job at it, it's one less thing that I have to worry about, and I know it's going to be done perfectly. So while I practice law and I am an attorney, I think the way that I can maintain a balance is really by taking the time to do the things that I need for myself, like running, yoga, spending time with my family, but also spending a lot of time with my office team so that we all work together really cohesively, and so that they are, you know, experts in the areas that they do, which allows me to, you know, have more time to do the other things and focus my energy on trial or clients or my family or whatever it is that's going on at the time.
Okay, understand. All right. Well, for those of you who are tuning in, you can actually try out what Rachel has been doing, which is yoga, running, and delegating the job to other people to do, rather than everything has to be done by you. And it's really, really effective for our mental health as well, and not just that, for our work to be done, because when you're delegating, you know, this person is good at this, so you can just let him or her do it, rather than just you being the boss of the company. You have to do everything by yourself. That will be pretty toxic for your mental health as well, if you were to do everything by yourself. And
Yeah, I actually, you know what? I got told this by somebody when I first started my law firm. I was building a website because you have to have a website, right?
Right.
And I didn't have very much money to start my law firm. I started my law firm with about $1,800. So I needed to budget really carefully how I was going to do this. And one of the ways that I thought about doing that was to build my own website. Okay. And I talked to somebody and they said, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, I could save some money and I don't have very much to start this. And they said, Rachel, you're an attorney. You're not a computer person. You know, I mean, I can use computers, but I don't build websites. And they said, you can spend a lot of time learning how to build a website. You will spend days, if not weeks, learning how to build your website. And it's going to be mediocre at best because you're not a web designer. Or you can take some of the money and you can hire the expert to do it. That will make it so that it's great. And it will free up all of those weeks that you were going to spend stressing about it to do something else, to promote your law firm or get clients or whatever it was that I was doing at that phase of my law firm. And it was a really challenging decision actually for me, but I ended up doing it. I ended up hiring somebody. I think I spent $1,000 on my website, which is still pretty reasonable. And I got a great website. And I've taken that lesson through everything because it's hard when you're an entrepreneur, a business owner, to give up control. It's hard to pay somebody else to do something you think you can just do. But if you can find out a way to have other people that are going to do it better, handle it, that will allow you to, as the business owner, to do what you do best more of the time. And I also think that's really central to being a successful business owner.
Right. I agree with you on that. And just want to ask you, right, you know, Rachel, when you are actually building your business up, I'm pretty sure you have met some failures, made some mistakes along the way. So can you tell us, right, do you have a favorite failure of yours and how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
I have so many failures. I think anybody that does sticks with anything for a significant amount of time is going to have failures. My biggest failure probably as a business owner is making the mistake of being friendly with my office staff or befriending my office staff. It was really hard when I first opened my company to be the boss, and I ended up, you know, becoming friends with my office staff in a way that didn't really define that I was the employer and they were an employee and I'm the boss and they, again, work for me. And the lines got really blurred. It ended up affecting my law firm over and over again because I didn't really understand how to be a boss. And because of that, my law firm suffered and I suffered as an attorney. I lost staff. I had to train. It was kind of, I felt like a horrible leader. I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. It was really, really hard. And I had to go back and I actually took classes and I read books and I found mentors and said, how do you do this? How can I maintain a positive office environment where we all get along and again, we work as a team, but I'm still the boss and my decisions matter, right? And that was a really hard thing for me to figure out how to do. I'm still learning at it, but I think I'm hands down way better than I was at the beginning. But that was probably the biggest thing. Being able to overcome that though and identify it and fix it probably has made me the most money and has saved me the most money because it's just frightfully expensive when you lose office staff.
True. Okay. Yeah, I get where you're coming from, especially when, you know, office staff, when they leave and you got to find a replacement, it will take time. A lot of time will be wasted and you need to get people to hunt for you a good staff that will be helping you out and things like that. And I'm just wondering, like, what made them want to leave you? And you said that not befriending with your employees, meaning to say that you cannot be too friendly with them, or what do you mean by that?
So I guess it's a hard thing to put into words, but you know, for example, there has to be an understanding and that we're not equals at the company. And I would really, it was really difficult for me to not want to be considered an equal. One, because I felt like I am not better than them, right? I didn't ever want my, and I still don't really want my office staff to feel that I think I'm better than them. But I didn't know how to treat them as an equal while still maintaining the fact that I'm in charge, right? I'm in charge. Right. So one of the biggest examples I have is that one time, you know, as the employer, I get to decide when I work and how I work, right? And as an employee, you accept a position saying that you're going to be here from 9 to 5. And if you want to take time off, you have to use your sick leave or your time, paid time off, or whatever the scenario is. And the lines would get so blurred on whether I was the employer or a friend that I would have staff getting upset if I wasn't there, you're getting annoyed if I did not approve their time off, saying things that like I didn't support their family when it's really not about supporting their family. It's the phones still need to get answered and they're not getting answered because you're never here. Right. And it also got to the point where I was, you know, we would talk and we would talk in a very friendly tone. So I would almost be their confidant when it came to their family issues, but that took away from their ability to work because now they're coming into the office kind of, you know, I don't know, letting go of all of their family. And so it really didn't work. It really was a situation where I needed to learn to draw the line that again, we're all human and we're all here to work hard, but I'm not your equal at the company. I own the company and you're here to do a job and you're going to respect my position and I'm going to respect yours. But when I'm gone, I'm gone and I pay you so that I can not be at the office. So I had a lot of that. It was really just an internal thing that I had to work on. A lot of it was communication and boundaries. I had to draw a lot of boundaries with my office about, you know, what's an appropriate thing to talk to me about and what's not an appropriate thing. I feel so bad because maybe your family is sick and you need to take care of them, but that doesn't mean that I can just give you infinite time off, right? I ultimately have to put the business first. So that's what I mean by it, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Wow, I wouldn't want my employees to do that to me as well. If I were to, you know, have a lot of employees under me, I wouldn't want everyone to treat me like a friend, and then after that, will take advantage because you know I'm able to grant them this off day leave and all, just so that you know they can. Maybe it's true that their family are really sick, or maybe it's a lie because they want to hang out with their friends or if their girlfriend or whosoever, in a sense, right? So, okay, I get where you're coming from.
And I don't blame any of my employees. I just want that to be clear. I don't think that any of them, it was absolutely my fault as the employer for not acting as an employer or acting as a leader. And I think that's why I consider it a failure on my part, because I allowed it to happen. It was completely because of my leadership style and how I was managing the office. So I don't fault them at all. I don't think it was their fault, the ones that kind of were the brunt of it. I think it was me. Yep. And that's why I consider it a failure.
Okay, I understand. Okay, got it. Wow, interesting. And I just want to ask you, like, when you are actually building your business up, I'm pretty sure you've met mentors along the way, right? So, Rachel, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from your mentor?
Oh, that's a lot. I think the best piece of advice I ever got from a mentor was to just keep going, right? And embrace I don't know if I can say this on your show, but like embrace the suck. Okay. There are things sure. that suck, yeah. right? And right, you have to just keep going. You have to, if you give up every time it gets hard, then you're never going to go through it. So I had mm-hmm. a mentor once that I was going through something hard and they said, you know, it's okay to be upset about it. And I tell this to my kids now too. It's okay to be upset. Feel it, be angry, go through whatever emotions you have to go through, but like set a time limit, right? Like today I'm right. gonna wallow in my woes and I'm gonna cry and be angry, but tomorrow I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna embrace this thing that happened that sucks, and I'm going to figure out my next step and always find the next step. And I think that has made it so that I'm able in my company to adapt. I think it's why we were continued to be successful through the pandemic. I think it's why we continue to be to grow and to be innovative. But I also think it translates outside of the office into everything that you can that you do. If feel what you need to feel and then figure out your next step and take the next step. And if you just keep taking the next step, then you know it'll be history before you know it.
Right, I agree with you on that. So for all of you who are tuning in, if 2022 were really bad and 2023, at now we are at quarter of the year already and you're still not able to achieve certain things, just keep going, embrace the suck, and just keep going again, all right? And I would like to ask you is that, just out of curiosity, how young are your kids right now? Because back then they were one. Now are they like 10 years old or something?
So my youngest, yes, my youngest is almost 10. The one that I missed her first birthday, she's almost 10. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have an 18-year-old actually also. I have a daughter that just turned 18 and is graduating high school in June. She wants to be an attorney, so we'll see how long that sticks for.
Right.
But that
fingers
would be
crossed.
Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing if, you know, yeah. I want my kids to do whatever they want, but if one of them ends up being an attorney, I have to admit I will be so excited. And then I have a son who is 12. So I have 18, 12, and almost 10.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Cool. And you know, your dad is actually an attorney. Your cousin is also an attorney. So are they working together with you in the firm or they are in separate firms?
They all have separate firms, actually. My dad lives in Nevada, and so he's licensed there. My cousin lives in Orange County, California, so he's local to me. But we all own our own law firms separately. And actually, we all do similar areas of law, but we have our own unique style, I think. My dad is an amazing attorney. My cousin is an amazing attorney. I my cousin's quite a bit older than me, and I joke and I say, like, gosh, that's what I want to be. I want to be like both of them. So hopefully I'm getting there. And yet it's really fun because they call me and I call them when we have questions or, you know, we run legal ideas or business ideas by each other. So it's I feel very grateful that I have them to lean on when I have a question about my law firm or about a case, quite frankly.
Nice. This is what we call collaboration in a sense, or even maybe friendly competition. If you guys are having, because you guys are having similar stuff and more unique style to one another in a sense. So I'm pretty sure you guys might have to handle similar cases for.
I don't consider them my competition, though. I practice quite a bit different than them, and I'm a different generation than both of them. So I bring, I guess, my millennial take on how a law firm should run, a business should run, and how we should practice law this day and age.
Okay, got it. Understand. And I just want to ask you, Rachel, what are bad recommendations you hear in your profession or area of expertise?
Well, I'm going to focus this on businesses because I know that's probably what a lot of your fans are interested in. I'm going to do two if that's okay. The first is that, like you said, you don't need an attorney. I think that is the biggest misnomer in business ownership. You want, if you're going to own a company, you want to know a business attorney. You don't necessarily want to have to pay for a business attorney or hire a business attorney, but you want to know one because there isn't going to be nothing worse for a business owner than facing a potential legal issue and not knowing who to call. I think as a business owner or just a human being, the worst thing would have to be to go to Google to find, and don't get me wrong, I love Google, right? And Google, Google gets me a lot of business, but how sad that as a business owner, you are resorting to a Google search to find an attorney that is going to represent you in something that you have probably dedicated countless hours, stress, life, time to. Mm-hmm. If you can know a business attorney up front and create a relationship so that if you need them, they're there, I think that's probably the most important thing. The second piece of bad advice that I hear quite a bit is that there's bad contracts. And there might be people listening that say, oh gosh, there are bad contracts. Here's the thing. There could be contracts that are better for one person than the other, right? We see those quite a bit. The only kind of bad contract is one that is not legally enforceable. That's a bad contract. That means it wasn't drafted correctly. But I don't think business owners or people should be afraid of contracts. There are certain points in life where you are not in a position to negotiate a great contract, but you still need it to be done. So I kind of take a different viewpoint and say, you should know what the contract says that you're signing, but even if it's not as favorable to you as you'd like, it's okay as long as you know what you're getting into. For example, if you open a brand new company and you want to get office space, you may have no business history. You may have no credit, business credit. You don't have any financials for your business. So you're asking somebody to take a risk on you to let you rent office space, and they may ask for personal guarantees. They may give you a higher rent. They may do things that are not as favorable to you. As long as you understand what you're getting into, you're still getting something out of it. You're getting office space that you need.
Right.
So I approach contracts, and I think that all business owners should approach contracts less from the, I need to have my contract to be great for me, and more of, I need to know what my contract says, understand how it's going to work, and see what happens if either one of us doesn't perform under the contract. That way, when you sign it, you know what you're getting into. And then hopefully as time goes on, you know, you can get contracts that are more favorable. But I don't know that bad contracts, I don't think that should be a thing. I think it should be understanding what your contract says, because that's what they are.
Yeah, bad contracts only happen when you're drunk, right? Like the person is like trying to take advantage of you, and you just keep, you just signed out of.
Don't sign things when you're drunk. Don't do that. Don't sign anything that you don't know what it says. If you don't know what it says, that's not the thing to sign, right? You don't want to sign something you don't understand.
Yeah, but sidetrack a little. Just wanna ask you, like, since we talk about drunk, and I started it in a sense. So if let's say you are drunk and you sign a contract, right? Does the law help you with that? Like saying that, oh, you're drunk, you signed a contract, so this contract is non-existential for you.
There are ways to get out of a contract, but it probably will depend about how drunk you were and whether you can even prove your level of capacity, which I think would be hard afterwards. Maybe, but I would say, you know, don't rely on being able to get out of a drunk contract. You can't even get a divorce or like an annulment. You can't undo your marriage many times when you're drunk and get married. So, and that's essentially a contract. Don't get yourself into legal situations when you're drinking. Just wait till the next day.
Yes. So for those of you who are going to sign contracts later at night, or maybe even tomorrow, any time of the day and night, please don't get drunk when you are
going to sign a contract.
Yes.
And if somebody's trying to get you to drink and then sign it, you know, that's a big red flag. Don't sign then either.
Yeah, I agree. And Rachel, now to the main focus of our interview. You know, when just now we were talking about new entrepreneurs as well. So when first starting your business, I understand that it's important to get all the legal matters in order as soon as possible. So in your experience, what's one legal consideration new entrepreneurs should be sure to handle right away and why?
Well, contracts. Let's go back to contracts, because I think contracts rule the world. I think that it's my position that many business owners fear contracts. They don't want to get into them because they consider them to be locked in, or they don't, you know, if it's for a service that they're providing, they don't want to spend the money on an attorney to get it drafted correctly. If you invest in good contracts or understanding the contracts that you're signing, it's going to very likely make you more successful down the road. You'll be able to collect money and enforce the payment from people that are getting the service from you, or buying from you if you sell goods. You'll also be able to make sure that you're not getting yourself into a contract that is going to screw you in 10 years, right? Or next year. Right. So contracts are really important. I don't do business without people that, you know, I don't do business with companies that won't do a contract. That's how important I think contracts are. And I really think the pitfall that many new business owners, but, you know, likewise, very experienced businesses too, is they don't rely on contracts enough. And then they don't have the legal basis to go after what they need to. And, again, that's not a good place to find yourself.
Yeah, totally agree. I agree with you on that. Especially contracts are very important for any businesses to run for the next 10 years or even more, as long as you live, right? So, okay, got it. And just now you actually mentioned something about pitfalls. So I would like to ask you, what are the common legal pitfalls for business owners besides contracts?
Yes. So some of the five big mistakes that I see business owners making. The first, I don't see all business owners doing it, but I think it is a common mistake, is to open a business and not spend the 8 hours a day that you would normally work at another job on your business. So how I see this play out is, I'll use myself as an example. When I first opened my law firm, I didn't have any clients. It was a brand new business. If I were going to sit at home and say, well, I don't have any clients, so I don't need to work an 8-hour day, I wouldn't really have a very successful business. So I think that the mistake business owners make is they take that attitude. If I don't have the work, so I don't need to work. When instead the position should be, man, I don't have any customers or I don't have any clients, so I need to spend that 8 hours a day going out, hitting the pavement and finding myself some clients or customers. And then maybe you have one customer. So now you can only work, you know, 1 hour of your day is doing your business. Well, the other seven need to be out there finding new customers, finding new clients, because that's how you're going to build your business. So treat your business as though it's a full-time job and work it and learn it for 8 hours a day or more when you first start, so that you can start getting that snowball effect. That's
right.
One of the biggest legal mistakes. I mean, not legal mistakes, just mistakes that I see new businesses make. The second is to go in with the mindset that they need a lot of money to start a business, right? So they go and they try and find all of these investors or all of these, you know, get loans and all of this. And you really don't do that. You don't need that. Start with, you know, selling one product or offering one service and reinvest in your company. Otherwise you're starting out behind eight ball. Your bills are going to start coming due. And that's, you know, again, you want to be ahead of it. You don't want to be behind it. So I think going out and getting a lot of funding or thinking you need that is a big misconception and a mistake that businesses make. The third is to undervalue your service. Now, I know in anybody that owns a business, there is, you know, there's some kind of value. And if nobody's going to pay for it, then you have to reduce your prices, right? That's why we have sale items. That's why we have companies that raise and decrease their prices. So to a certain degree, you want to, if you're a brand new business, you want to make sure that you have competitive pricing so that you are able to attract new business because you're new to the market space. And so there has to be some reason that people would try you. And oftentimes the fastest way to do that is with a reduced price, but you don't want to lose money, right? So for example, if you're selling pens and your pens cost you 50 cents each, you need to know that and not sell them for 40 cents each just because you want to get customers. That doesn't work. You could maybe sell it for 60 cents, right? So I think being able to value yourself and not undervalue or overvalue kind of your good or your service is a big mistake that I see. I'm a big fan, like I said, of delegation, but I think that a lot of business owners either don't delegate enough or they delegate everything way too soon. You need to know as a business owner, everything about your business. You should be able, at least at the beginning, to handle every aspect of the company. You don't have to be great at it, but you need to know it, because how are you going to hire somebody and teach them how to do it if you don't? How are you going to be able to check to make sure that they're doing it correctly if you don't know how to do it? And so I think as you start really being able to learn your own business, learn how to run the business and delegate appropriately, not too fast and not too slow. Those are my big mistakes that I see.
Okay. Oh, nice. Okay, so those are the big mistakes that you see when new entrepreneurs are actually starting their businesses. Then how about legal mistakes? Are there like legal mistakes that this group of new entrepreneurs, especially millennial entrepreneurs, should avoid when they're going to start their business? Is it like taxation or anything like that that's going to be involved in that?
You only, in California anyway, you only need to say you're going to be operating a business for profit in order to create a business. There's actually no legal requirements. Oh. And I think that can be a problem, right? Some people, so I, one of the biggest mistakes legally is creating the wrong entity, whether that be a sole proprietorship, an LLC, a corporation or something. We have so many social media lawyers, right? And those are kind of like, the people that you get your legal advice from social media, but they're not attorneys and they're telling you what to do. You know, those are, I think that can do the most harm, because you want to make sure you're setting up the right entity for your business at the time. That might very well mean that you need, you know, a corporation is best for taxation or for liability purposes. It might mean an LLC, but LLCs are different in all of the states. They have different protections. It might mean that, you know, you're just starting out and what you do really doesn't require anything and you can be a sole proprietorship. So I think not trusting necessarily your friend or the person you meet at the bar or, you know, the social media platform just about what you should do, figuring it out, doing the research, talking to an accountant, talking to an attorney to make sure that you are creating the correct legal entity that's going to protect your liability and then also, you know, function the way you need it to function from a business perspective.
Okay, understand. Okay, cool. Wow, this is really important for those who are starting out for businesses, especially those who are living in California and the states, even though different states have different rules and regulations as well. But I'm pretty sure, you know,
the concept translates internationally, right? Like every jurisdiction, whether it's a state or a country or a province or whatever it is within that geographical area has similar setups. And when you're starting a company, you want to make sure that you are creating the company that's going to work best for you and your company while still understanding the laws in that area. So to me, it seems, well, just not, it's just not a good idea to start a company without talking to an attorney or an accountant to find out how it should be set up in your area.
Right. Okay, cool. So for those of you who are tuning in and you want to start your own business, especially if you're in California, you should go and reach out to Rachel King. Later on, we'll provide you with the details on how you can find her and where you can find her. All right. And I'd like to ask you, right, Rachel, how can business owners protect their businesses besides reaching out to an attorney? Any other things that they can do to protect their businesses?
The least expensive thing that and the most effective way for business owners to protect themselves and their companies is with insurance. There is no other way for the amount of money to protect yourself. That will protect your business assets, that will protect your personal assets, that will alleviate a lot of stress so that if something doesn't go the right way, whether it's with an employee or with a customer, or you know, your building burns down, or you have lose a shipment when it's coming overseas, whatever the case may be, having the right kind of insurance can make it so that if you have a catastrophe, you get the financial injection that you need to cover it. I had a client once who owned a retail store and was actually broken into. They did very high-end retail, and their storage room in the back, they just gotten a shipment of, again, very expensive merchandise, and it was broken into at night and all of it was gone. It was all stolen. It came to about $500,000. This was maybe 8 years ago. At the time, it came to like $500,000 worth of inventory. It was huge. And they were a small business. So this was this was devastating to them. Fortunately, they had insurance that came in and injected them with all of the money that they lost. Had they not had that, they probably would have gone bankrupt, because you just don't have the, how do you recover from that? You still have to pay for it, but now you can't even sell it. So, and while it's illegal and they can press charges, that doesn't help the company. So insurance can save the day.
I totally agree with you. Insurance is really important. Even though we don't like to be sold on insurance, but we still find that insurance is really important, not just for your business, but also for yourself.
Right. And I hate paying insurance. I don't sell insurance. I can't stand insurance. I hate paying my insurance bill because I hardly ever, knock on wood, have claims. But when you need it, it is so helpful. And for the cost, you're not going to get the coverage and the protection anywhere else.
Yep. Totally agree with you. Damn. So true. This is so true. I believe that, you know, insurance is really important. So for those of you who are starting out your business and all, you guys should go and buy your own insurance, get knowledge on which insurance you should get, and then after that get that for yourself.
There's one insurance that's particularly important. Business owners oftentimes overlook insurance on themselves. We think of car insurance, we think of business insurance, we think of these, but many business owners don't think about what's going to happen to their income and how they would make income if they can no longer work anymore. If you are the sole provider, or your company provides a source of income for your family, and now you can't do it anymore, whether that's because of a car accident or an illness, how is that going to affect your family? And you can actually get insurance for the income that you bring in to your company. And I think that's an important one that many people overlook.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that. And you know, Rachel, we know that you have actually worked with many, many successful business owners. So can you tell us, like, after working with so many of them, what do they all have in common?
They want to provide a good or a service in a better way, so better than it already exists. Entrepreneurs typically like to be in charge. They have an idea and they want to control that idea, and not in a bad way, in a good way. So I think that most common trait of an entrepreneur or a business owner is wanting to innovate, to do something, whatever it is that they're doing, in a unique way or in a way that they think is going to be better, whether it's a better product, a better way of operating, you know, better way of interacting with customers, whatever it's going to be. Some kind of innovation is usually at the heart of every entrepreneur.
Yeah, I agree. That's why, like you mentioned earlier, you have your own unique style for your law firm and your clients as well. So that's why you want to, you know, bring more value to them. And I agree with you on that, in terms of, you know, adding more better service and make this world a better place, like what many people would say, in a sense, for a lot of entrepreneurs who would like to do that as well. And you know, as we are coming to the end of the podcast, I have one last question for you.
Okay,
all right. And that is this. Imagine this, Rachel. You suddenly lose everything, your money, your reputation, your assets. So what will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
I would go get a job. That would be my very first thing that I would do, is figure out how to generate some kind of income. And I really love this question. I love it because we don't ever expect it, right? But I would not be, you know, opposed to go getting, you know, a job flipping burgers at McDonald's if I needed to. You have to figure out something. So my first goal would be to generate an income, to figure out how I could make a living, at least temporarily, to bring something in. And then I'm a natural business owner. I don't care for working for other companies. So I would create a company again. It depends if I was still a lawyer. If you took away my degree, I don't know what I would do. But if I was still able to practice law, I would start again. I would do exactly what I did before and what I tell entrepreneurs to do, which is to, you know, if I'm working at McDonald's, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. That means 5 p.m. until I go to bed, I need to be working on my own business and creating social media pages and telling people what I do and trying to grow my company again. I think community involvement is really, really important for that. So I would lean very heavily on my community. That would hopefully reestablish my reputation and get me known. And then ultimately, you know, I think I would be able to get back to where I am today, or maybe near it. I don't know. Depends how old I am.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Wow. Love it. Love your golden nuggets that you've shared with us so far. Really appreciate your time and really appreciate you being here with us. And Rachel, where can my audience find you if, let's say, they are actually based in California and they need your services?
You can call or text me at 951-834-7715. That is my office number. It also comes to my cell phone. That is a very hard number. Probably nobody wrote it down. So you can also find me on the socials at The Lawyer King. I am there. My website is The Lawyer King. You can DM me or find my phone number and reach out if you have any questions. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok, and hopefully we can work together.
All right. Awesome. So for those of you who are tuning in, thank you so much for, you know, being a part of this. And of course, thank you for your support as well for the Legacy Show. And I can see quite a number of you that's tuning in right now, and you have already commented as well. Really appreciate you guys. And you can go to the website that's provided in the caption and the social media as well. You can go there and check Rachel out. And who knows what kind of collaboration or what kind of services that you need. I believe Rachel will be of service and will be of value to you. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone once again, and take care and stay tuned for the next episode of The Legacy Show. All right, see you and speak soon. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Legacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called The Legacy Show Family, so you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. Alright, so with that, I would like to thank you once again, see you, and stay tuned for another episode of The Legacy Show.